Welcome to the A News Podcast. This is episode 19 for July 9th. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories do have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial: Thoughts on Fame and Hiding. David Graeber, Aragorn, John Zerzan. These are some of the big anarchy names in this week's A News Mix. As someone who is working on a project that still gets hate because of its association with a big name in U.S. anarchy, I have contradictory feelings about the phenomenon of big men. I want credit for my work, my thinking, my creativity. I want the project I work on to be recognizable as a product of my effort, as well as others, of course. You could say that I want everyone to be big. On the other hand, fame sucks. Fame is an excuse for people to put words in your mouth, to misquote you, and to highlight actual inconsistencies in the most ungenerous possible way. Anarchists have this thing about security, made only more complicated by generational tendencies to reveal to and hide from social media. A significant side effect of this is the validation of the most cowardly kind of sniping, in the name of security and feedback. And yet, anonymity can be helpful for honest feedback, especially because of the character policing that just gets more intense with the various kinds of surveillance we suffer under. Then we get these named people. People who we may agree with, we may disagree with, or we may both agree and disagree with, but who we overreact to because of the rarity of named people, especially named people who take controversial positions and or last for more than a year or two. They get overemphasized, burdened with all the angst and animosity and trust and appreciation of people who are looking for direction in unmapped territory. This is made even more difficult to avoid when these are the people who have taught you something important. It's almost impossible to not put them in some kind of parent role that is highly prone to being rebelled against. And there's also an argument that people should pick strong opponents. It can be important to choose someone to disagree with who tests your own strength. So in that way, it becomes almost the responsible thing to do for these characters, these named people, to refer most to each other, which also, of course, perpetuates the idea that they're the best, most important representations of different ideas. I don't know where to go from here. I could end with an only personally relevant injunction for myself to toughen up, or with an empty plea to take more time with people, or for people to be more wary of investing too much in others you don't know, or for people to always try to speak with their own words. None of that seems especially useful or on point, any more than my ambivalence is useful. I guess this has to end with the reflection that sometimes bringing up a complicated reality is its own reward. What's new this week? Here's what happened when I debated Nazi Richard Spencer. This story comes from Ida Vox, a part of the One People Project, which is about researching and reporting on right-wing groups, individuals, and activities, and encouraging vigilance against them. This was a hosted debate with an anarchist, the author, and noted punchy Spencer. Quote, "A recurring theme of the debate was that Spencer kept accusing me of dodging questions. But the world is nuanced. It made me hyper-aware that he saw the world in his simplistic black-and-white terms, so to speak. He could not even sit still while I went more deeply into the issues at hand. Perhaps he was just waiting for me to repeat the watered-down talking points he expected an anti-fascist activist to say, thereby confirming his worldview. But when I did not play his confirmation bias game, he could not even comprehend what I was saying. Whenever I would more deeply address a topic in question to suss out nuances, he would lose patience. In addition to wondering about his black and white worldview, I couldn't help but wonder how often he actually sat and listened to the ideas of women, femmes, or trans people in his whites-only, very male world. Perhaps not a lot." Unquote. One commenter noted that paying attention to Spencer feeds him, and there's an argument for that with Spencer in particular.
The Madurization of Chavismo, Anarchist Statement on Venezuela. From LibCom, this is a thoughtful assessment of the situation in Venezuela as it relates both to that country and its impacts on surrounding territories. Quote, "In the beginning of the 1990s, the Fifth Republic movement, the political party forming to support Hugo Chavez's run for president in 1998, appeared in The Market of Political Representation. Its spokespersons spared no praise and compliments for the rebellious and self-organized masses. But today, when Chavismo has reached its optimal maturation as a neoliberal, militaristic, and repressive system, those same masses are discredited with epithets such as terrorist, criminal, and extreme rightists, accusations that seek to hide the hideous mutation undertaken by all of the professionals of revolutionary politics in power. Unquote.
Guns, Lies, and the NRA, My Journey from Gun Shows to Anarchist. From IGD, this is an anti-NRA essay primarily, from a gun-supporting, used-to-be NRA supporter. Probably only in California or New York would this be even mildly newsworthy.
IRPGS response to the 28th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square incident. From Insurrection News, this is an essay recounting and analyzing the infamous events in Tiananmen Square. Quote, from history, IRPGF concludes that self-liberation of the masses can only be realized through revolution. Not only do we need to point out the mistake of the lack of class analysis, as well as the failure of peaceful nonviolent tendencies, it is also necessary that we criticize the whitewashing of history by liberals. The student leaders and intellectuals that were influenced by liberal ideas bear great responsibility for the revolution of 1989 ending before it had even begun. Inside this movement, peaceful nonviolent tendencies were actually reduced to a mechanism of easing up the revolutionary spirit of the people for the ruling class. In fact, historical events that are often praised as victories of nonviolent struggle, such as the American Civil Rights Movement, only resulted in concessions made by the ruling class once faced with an imminent danger of revolution. Unquote.
What is a Justin Trudeau on Canadian nationalism and social peace for Canada's 150th birthday? From NoCanada.info, the same site that brought us a list of things to do on Canada Day, this is an analysis of Trudeau's role in Canada and Canada's position, especially vis-a-vis the U.S. The author categorizes three factors that define Canadian politics: favorable comparison to the U.S., resource extraction, and the relationship of provinces to the Federation. Quote, looking at these two recent governments helps us understand Trudeau's mandate. The Harper government wasn't able to take the expansion of resource extraction projects as far as it wanted to because he wasn't able to maintain the other two legs of the Canadian political stool, the pressure on the provinces from the retreat of the federal government, and the appearance of being socially regressive relative to the U.S. provoked too much opposition. At its base, Trudeau's mandate, then, is to produce enough social peace for infrastructure expansion to become possible. It's especially important for him to build this peace with Indigenous nations, where resistance tends to be more committed, experienced, and able to act in critical areas far from cities, because Canada's really big, and me and most other anarchists live in a handful of large urban areas close to the border, far from these all-important extractive industries. Unquote. Fundamentally, this piece reminds us that having a liberal in office raises different problems, not fewer, for the resistant.
An apology for communism, the invisible committees now. From Autonomies, this is the fourth and final installment on reactions to the Invisible Committee's latest writing. Quote, if to speak of communism sounds grossly anachronistic in our times, it is because it was, in the 20th century, misconceived as a social doctrine, which is to say as a response to a strictly human concern. The Invisible Committee says, despite that, it has never ceased to inform the world. If it continues to haunt it, it is because it does not proceed from any ideological fixation, but from a fundamental, immemorial lived experience, that of community, which revokes so many economic axioms as well as beautiful constructions of civilization. There is never community as an entity, but only as an experience. It is that of the continuity with beings and with the world. In love, friendship, we have the experience of this continuity. Page 127. There is a lived experience of communism in moments of giving, sharing, friendship, a singular experience of creative interaction with others in the world. It is only by divorcing the human being from this experience that communism could come to be imagined as an emaciated abstract fraternalism, an empty internationalism, to be appropriated and corrupted by political movements, parties, and states. But what is communism if not friendship, equality among friends? Unquote.
Protesters face 80 years as U.S. attorney brings unprecedented mass felony charges. From the site Unicorn Riot, which describes itself as, quote, a volunteer-operated decentralized media collective comprised of multimedia artists and journalists, born on the internet in 2015, we operate non-hierarchically, independent of corporate and government funding. Our nonprofit media organization currently spans across multiple U.S. cities, including Boston, Denver, Minneapolis, and New York City, unquote. This article raises, as have previous articles about these arrests, the precedent-setting nature of the charges, and goes into detail about some of the logistics of trying this many people. Quote, also discussed in the hearings were difficulties with the court's e-filing system. Defense attorneys were told they had to send any motions to each other's individual defense attorney, which some pointed out was no easy task, as the format of the government's case forces each of the over 200 defendants to have their own counsel. One defense lawyer requested that the court provide a written record of Judge Leibowitz's oral instructions, as they were unable to attend in person each of the many hearings potentially relevant to their client's defense. Judge Leibowitz explicitly refused, saying, "That's not going to happen. I'm not doing that," unquote.
Police raid on the G20 camp, a tale of violence and betrayal. CrimeThink provides this story of police brutality at the G20 camp, although it's unclear where the betrayal is. It's a mix of what happened during the day and being mad at the cops for not abiding by a court ruling that allowed for protesters. So the cops betrayed the courts? It ends with a note on strategy, which includes the following. Quote, "The park was a trap. The police did not let us in because the court had ruled that we had a right to be there, but only so that they could surround, contain, and brutalize us. Perhaps we should have stayed outside the police lines. When a huge number of police are available to the state, as during this G20 summit, it doesn't pay to let them surround us. It's better to remain at the margins of their zones of control, always forcing them to expand further, spreading their resources thinner and creating situations in which they can't help but antagonize the general population. At the edge of their range of control, our smaller numbers are not a problem. On the contrary, they can make it harder to track us, harder to predict what we will do next. When the authorities have to keep controlling ever wider areas, their bulk and force become liabilities, burdening them and provoking the public, drawing additional demographics and variables into the conflict." Unquote.
Anarchism could help to save the world. From The Guardian, a paper with a good reputation for decent writing, which this piece does not uphold. Admittedly, hoping that non-anarchists will write with nuance and information about anarchy and anarchist history is probably ridiculous when anarchists frequently can't even do it. And it is true that the most obvious clichés were avoided in this piece. What I can't get past is the following passage. Quote, "But the anarchists' own struggle would be lost, partly because their commitment to democratic participation undercut their capacity to sustain stable mass organizations, and because they were undermined by the violence espoused by some anarchist groups against Kropotkin's advice, which provoked ruthless state repression." Unquote. The idea that the state would just have peacefully given up power if only those anarchists hadn't made threats is aggravating. The article does point out the social tendency to look to anarchy when everything else has fallen apart, however. Mildly amusing.
Why am I facing 75 years in prison? From Al Jazeera, the news source that's far enough away to be halfway credible. This is a first-person account of the day, reflecting as well on previous instances of police brutality against protesters in the U.S. Quote, "The prosecutor would like to depoliticize the charges we are facing, but the reality is that this case is not about so-called criminal behavior. This case is about turning protesters into felons and the criminalization of resistance. The state is perfectly willing to permit thousands of people to wear safety pins and pussy hats, march along well-policed parade routes, and powerlessly petition their authorities for change, so long as they do not shatter the illusion of everyday politics or disrupt the constant flow of capital. The severity of the threat is intended to extract as many guilty pleas as possible, while sending a clear message to potential protesters that the consequences for opposition will be grave. But what Standing Rock and Black Lives Matter have taught us all is that if a community's resistance is perceived as effective, then the full measure of state violence will be used to neutralize it. Standing Rock prevented the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline for months before its eviction by legions of police. The executions of Mike Brown and Freddie Gray produced demonstrations of such tremendous pain and outcry that they seized Ferguson in Baltimore and were stomped out by the National Guard." Unquote.
The Black Bloc, which was not, comments on the Hamburg G20. This is from the site non.copyriot.com, which doesn't give information about itself, but has the categories biopolitics, econofiction, generic science, lost and found, machines, necropolitics, non-music, philofiction, and the category this piece was in, non-politics. The article is in prep for G20, takes issue with some liberal press in Germany, and ends with this, quote, "Already in 2007, the ready-made artist Claire Fontaine identified why we feel the need to inquire into the existence or non-existence of this thing called Black Bloc. As Fontaine writes, quote, the Black Bloc is you when you stop believing in it, and end quote. And what led Fontaine to draw such a conclusion about this thing we hear so often about are the very reasons that allow us to say, in good faith, that we haven't seen a Black Bloc. For us, as well as Fontaine, the Black Bloc is defined as that which exists insofar as everyone stops believing in its existence. Because today, it seems, one can encounter the Black Bloc everywhere one goes. This includes everything from the evening news, 4th of February 2007 on the 8 o'clock news, see what appears to be a male figure throwing stones in a night lit by flames. He is wearing a very elegant Dolce & Gabbana bomber jacket with a big silver D&G on the back and an immaculate white ski mask. To mundane yet unexpected places, such as the storefront signs at the Palais de Tokyo. Quote, while my eyes follow the footsteps of customers going to the Black Bloc boutique at the entrance to the Palais de Tokyo, Agamben's words about the souls in limbo automatically pops into my head like letters without addresses. They remained without destiny. Unquote.
Immediate freedom for our anarchist comrade, Nicolás de Antueno, stopped the repression by the Argentinian state. This is from Ruptura Colectiva, and is the story of trailing arrests and state abuses of prisoners. Argentina arrested Facundo Jones Huala for activism in defense of the Mapuche people. People protested this and more arrests were made, including of Antueno, who was also beaten by police. He is now injured and in solitary confinement. Quote, we call all social struggles, communities, collectives, and companions in Argentina and the world to put pressure on the following governmental instances and or calling this numbers to demand their early release, as well as relevant actions that are needed in the future, unquote.
David Graeber, Syria, Anarchism, and Visiting Rojava. From the realnews.com website, quote, we need daily television news that reports with ordinary people's interests in mind, unquote. This is a badly transcribed interview, but it is attached to a video so you can listen for yourself also. It's safe to say that the interviewer is not an anarchist. Quote, interviewer, what's the difference between state and what they're doing? Because they've got their territory, so surely. David Graeber, it's to protect society. They say that, like, the argument that they have is, interviewer, isn't that a semantic difference, though? David Graeber, well, they think not, because what they would say is that as a state, the state is a monopoly on the legitimate use of violence. Of course, in the territory, they don't have such a monopoly. It's a democratic bottom-up organization. There is no institution that can do that. So then they say, well, any institution has to defend itself. Anything in nature has to defend itself. But it's not waging an aggressive war. So their army is called the People's Defense Units, and it's also democratic. They elect their leaders. Every night, they discuss the decisions and critique them. And it's all very much an experiment in democracy. You'd think this was like, great, as soon as they need a real army, then let's see what happens. Well, they always win. They've been completely defeating ISIS systematically on the ground, and at the moment, they're marching on the ISIS capital. Unquote. I'm not a Graeber fan, but he's pretty inoffensive in this interview.
G20, call for an international week of solidarity, July 20th through the 27th, 2017. Another in many articles about the J20 defendants, this one again from CrimeThink, it lists some suggestions for actions people can take in the categories of fundraising, political action, outreach, increasing visibility, isn't that outreach, building connections, and building capacity.
Heathcote Williams, radical British poet who helped form Anarchist Nation, dies at 75. From the New York Times, this is an obituary of an English anarchist playwright, poet, and actor. Quote, he became a leader of the squatter movement in the 1970s, directing homeless Londoners to available space through his agency, Rough Tough Cream Puff. He also helped create the Free and Independent Republic of Freestonia, an anarchist country within a country named after a nearby street, Freeston Road. Located in the Notting Hill neighborhood, it issued its own passports and stamps and applied to the United Nations for full membership. Jeffrey Howe, then the shadow chancellor of the Exchequer, named Mr. Williams Freestonia's ambassador to the United Kingdom. In the 1980s, Mr. Williams began writing what he called, quote, investigative poetry, book-length screeds on environmental themes. With footnoted sources, poems like Whale Nation, Sacred Elephant, and Falling for a Dolphin, he emitted a sustained cry of anguish at humanity's assault on the animal world. Autogeddon was a Jeremiad directed at global car culture, which he called a humdrum holocaust, the Third World War no one bothered to declare. Unquote. It's great to hear about the life of this person who was an anarchist until his death.
Revolution Against All Governments, Critical Reflections on the Attitude of the Syrian Opposition Towards Turkish Politics. From Bordered by Silence comes this piece critiquing Syrian opposition groups. The initial note by the translator provides helpful context. The article itself starts out, quote, "As a refugee or a resident in Turkey, I'm overcome by contradictory feelings when I talk about this country, which has taken in millions of refugees, particularly from Syria and Iraq. Its political elites are engaged in several ongoing regional issues, notably Syria with all its ramifications. What I find striking here is the widespread attitude of support for the Turkish government by a large section of the Syrian opposition located in the territory of this state that seems to defend the cause of the Syrian people. This raises major doubts about the solidity of their values, which have in turn led to popular protests in Syria about the suitability of the opposition and the effect of passing on their views to future generations." Unquote.
Cultural terrorism, poetic potential for subversion. From the website radicalartreview.com by Julian Langer, this is a situationist-inspired query on what kinds of actions make sense in today's world. Quote, "This involves, for the situationists, a point of departure from the spatial field, part of the Unitarian Urbanist project, the project before their focus turned to what Debord called Society of the Spectacle, his seminal text. This can deploy deterrent, subversive situationist pranks, a practice that developed into the now well-established practice of culture jamming. Examples of this which can be considered derive techniques are parkour, flash mobs, and free hug actions. After the Manchester terrorist attack, Bakhtash Nouri's free hugs action struck a particularly tangible chord with many of us. Could this be because, as we become culturally and psychically immersed in what sociologist and postmodern philosopher Baudrillard termed the simulation of hyperreality, with the news becoming more and more like green screen films, we long for something as tangible and immediate as the touch of another? Maybe. Maybe the immediate, the intimate, is our best means as radicals of creative approach and political attack." Unquote.
Let's learn from the past. Assassination attempt on Henry Clay Frick. From mainstream media source, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, this is a history of Frick as industrialist and victim of an assassination attempt by Sasha Berkman. The point of the article is that assassination attempts make people sympathize with the victim and detract attention from what the victim did to deserve it.
Media projects. Free Radical Radio, audiobooks, The Infernal Desire Machines of Dr. Hoffman, Part 2, Continuing Adventures. Note, I'm sure that John Zerzan is claiming full credit for the lack of recent ITS communiques from this project.
Podcasts, A Block of the Brilliant. While host Aragorn expresses some exhaustion with the topics of ITS, the release of two episodes that deal directly and explicitly with that group will only serve to rile the trolls. One episode is with Wall Talker, a TASA editor, the other with previous Brilliant host Bellamy, who continues to deal in good faith with the any exposure to ITS is unacceptable crowd. The other two episodes released here are an interview with Colin, the remarkably skin-in-the-game New York artist, and another installment with Isaac Cronin, this time on his documentary entitled Some Call It Sleep.
Anarchy Radio, July 4th, 2017. The show is always an hour long. This episode gets started late at about 7 minutes into the recording. Jay-Z wears an FRR t-shirt, tiny frying pans, money for opioid addiction, pollution in India, proud misunderstandings of the Brilliant podcast conversation between Bellamy and Aragorn. Jay-Z continues to be unable to distinguish between talking about something and promoting that thing. He does seem able to insist on nuance when it's a topic he supports, like the inability of manipulating DNA to cure schizophrenia, for example. This episode does have some very nice jazz.
TFS Radio, Border Abolition Plus More, a conversation with people from No More Deaths. An hour long, Sean Swain suggests firing the entire FBI. Hard to put it past Trump, to be honest. So one of Sean's more realistic propositions. Then William talks to two members of the Arizona humanitarian aid group, No More Deaths, which does solidarity work with border crossers in that region, as well as advocacy, legal work, etc. Maria and Jeff talk about how they got involved, what they do, and some media reactions, along with the rise in repression that the group has faced recently, including a June 15th highly militarized raid on Bird Camp, a remote outpost that serves as a clinic. Also, what people can do to help.
This is the topic of the week here for the second week of July 2017. The topic this week is Don't Get Trolled, and I'm here talking to H.P. Wombat. This week's topic is near and dear to our hearts. Sometimes entertaining and often frustrating, trolling as a phenomena is endemic to modern discourse, and this is especially true of political spaces. From people who veer discussions wildly off topic, with seemingly unrelated opinions, to those who provoke frustration or even anger with opinions which we disagree with strongly. We are presented daily with complicated social interactions, both online and offline. Trolls, by nature of their often provocative views and tendency to dominate discussions, may leave us feeling overwhelmed and ill-prepared to do anything but try and ignore them. This topic of the week is about taking a more proactive stance on trolling without getting pulled into the cycle of trolling itself. Much as trolling often snowballs, on-topic comments which actively engage with the original topic of discussion or engage with it in less unpleasant ways can pull people out of the troll spiral. What are some concrete ways to shape a discussion to be interesting and engaging when we see it going off the rails? How can we make conversations we don't feel included in or feel frustrated with more interesting to us? How do we challenge views we disagree with without engaging in the often fruitless and unpleasant task of trying to engage a troll directly? Here are some of the suggestions from the collective. We'd love to hear more in the comments. 1. Point out something you like, don't like, or are confused about in the original topic of discussion. 2. Mention something you're reminded of in your past experiences, or something you've read before that agrees or disagrees with the original piece. Offer a link to a related article can help slow the discussion down and get people more involved in a more interesting way. 3. Offer a deeper analysis of the article. Is what the piece is saying old or new? What kind of anarchy is it describing? 4. What are the strengths and weaknesses of the arguments presented? What is a good example of? What is a bad example of? What would your favorite historical anarchist say about this? That's 5. And I guess I'll give an introduction to H.P. Wombat for people who aren't aware of him, because he is hasn't been sort of around the A-News space. But for the first 6 to 8 years of A-News, H.P. Wombat was a common figure. You also predated A-News, and you were very involved in a lot of InfoShop conversations. Of course, I know you from a whole bunch of different contexts. And mostly, I consider you to be a second-generation troll. You know, I'm actually going to disagree with the definition that they're implying here, but obviously part of our discussion can be about defining terms. I kind of refer to the first anarchist trolls being people like Bob Black, who perhaps even Kevin Keating, whose poster campaigns and sort of just general attitude towards how to instigate people, in the modern parlance would be called trolling. And then you came around and sort of represent that second generation. What are your thoughts about this topic and about trolling in general?
I enjoy trolling to a certain degree. From the framing of the question or the topic of the week, it seemed like it was more about how to control the trolling as opposed to what trolling is and how to engage in trolling. But of course, that would mean that you're kind of putting the site under threat if you're actually exposing it to trolling. Like, this is troll-ready territory. Go ahead, go right on after it, you know. for me, how I've handled it as moderator, because before I handled it, doing trolling myself, I would have to figure out how to stop trolling. Like I did a lot of Yahoo groups and stuff like that, and so I studied up on what's the difference between a troll and just someone who's trying to start an argument, who's posting flame bait, and a lot of times it's not really like. You can't order someone to stop. You can't say, stop that, because then, they're just going to fight you over it. And if you ban them, eventually the ban cycle can get pretty bad. So that's always been an issue with being really strict about it. And one of the consequences is, as you seem to defend pretty well, and I pretty much agree with you on, is that there needs to be somewhere where we can argue with each other, I guess, safely without a moderator coming in and stopping the argument, because sometimes things need to be said in a way that usually might cause the person to jump up and trigger, you're my enemy, I want to argue with you.
But you've sort of come around. I would say that for many years you were a fairly purist arguer on behalf of trolls and troll culture.
My turning point towards trolling, I basically dropped most of my moderator roles and I went to 4chan and saw how they did theirs. So there's really more of an art to it. And it the art is kind of also associated with, if you're in a fight, you're going to try to provoke someone into a fight. But also, if you're like that guy in the crowd that hears the lecturer talking and you point out a huge fallacy in what that lecturer is giving, and it just disrupts the entire presentation. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you start seeing it's not just the most aggressive person. Suddenly it's the critical person, but the person that's usually not heard, nobody really wants to hear them to a certain degree. But there's infamy with trolling, as you were mentioning with Bob Black and Kevin Keating. So that causes a lot of controversy when you actually do it on a regular basis. To a certain degree, you could say that a lot of the politics that have gone on from the more moral standpoint could be considered trolling to a certain degree, where they basically tell you can't say this, that, or the other in a crowd full of people where it's basically an open forum. You're basically asking for someone that has an opposing view to confront you. And whatever was meant to be talked about was derailed, but they managed to get their point across. They get people to talk about what they're doing. And it becomes a conversation, a narration that wasn't expected, but a lot of times you learn from it. And that was one of the main things that I enjoy about trolling in general is when you turn the conversation in a different direction, the expected answer isn't always there until you start pulling. The expected answer just isn't there, and the new answer to a question you never asked appears. And, there's so many different ways you can go with it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with most forums is that you really require a critical mass of people who have incredibly good faith to turn trolling into something as positive as what you're spinning.
Yeah, in order to have a positive trolling culture, there was an AnokChan that existed very briefly, or AnarchChan, and we tried to create some sort of space where anarchists could just go there and troll their hearts out and try to practice their memes and see what would happen. And ultimately, it's appealing to a small crowd of people to actively do it as a thing that they want to do. It seems like the anarchist space isn't really inviting to a person that would be a troller, a person that actively tries to troll, as opposed to someone that might just think they're right and wants to prove they're right, when they're willing to use underhanded tactics and other things in order to derail discussion, disrupt it, as well as put forward their point of view. I see a lot of that more often on Facebook than actual real true trolling. I see more just people just trying to pull partisan behavior through like kind of trolling tactics.
Yeah, I kind of think that, Anak Chan shut down 2 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And I wonder maybe 2017, would be a better year for it. In other words, like there was a type of exhaustion that seemed to hit the project, a couple years ago, and there just wasn't much activity there. I wonder if because of the rise of the alt-right and the rise of sort of the Trump brigades, it would be a good time, or if perhaps it would be a worse time and it would just be nothing but a shit show where a whole bunch of sort of alt-right people would what's it called when a crew of trolls attack something, like a raid or something?
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed is there is kind of this association of trolling with the right wing. It's like we have like the left and right wing, the social justice warriors, the enemy of the troll, and that type of thing. So like the anti-moral anarchists and stuff like that have often agreed with that kind of direction. So you can see the blending in some of the politics between the two. As an Anak Chan started again this time around, like the problem with the way it ended was some of the supporters wanted it to remain kind of still left anarchist at some point or at some level, instead of it just being really crazy but also anarchist or whatever, and they ended up heading out. I don't know how often they contributed, and it was one of the arguments was basically like, is Anak Chan a anarchist thing, or is it a trolling place that anarchists go to? So that like there's that argument that kind of needs to be solved as well. But if it was anarchist, are we going to make sure that it's an anarchist but also anti-fascist? I mean, that would be like a main thing. Like, are you going to invite troll culture, say trolls come here, and if you have anarchist tendencies, we love it if you'd be here. So they're going to still like run around saying all the things that what are associated with right wing trolls, like cuck and snowflake and all that other typical jargons that is associated with that leftard.
This actually comes up in the context of Anarchist News because there are three sort of very frequent posters who definitely draw a lot of ire, but also take up a lot of oxygen. So just as an example, Sir Isenga, he seems to use some of that alt-right jargon and to really just, comment far in excess of more or less any single other person on the site. I've actually been thinking about sort of an interesting proactive way to deal with him might be to limit him to one post a story, unless he's actually engaging in the conversation or something like that. Because, I was just looking at a story and he had, three or four posts with nobody engaging with him. And it really does make the site seem like it's his personal fiefdom.
Yeah, and I'd say that in the early years, I had that problem as well, where I kind of dominated the discussion in the early years, and I actually became conscious of it because I also like having participation with some of the moderation. I knew that if I was too much of an active person, it wouldn't be me participating with the audience, it's the audience waiting for me to talk. And I think you're kind of having the same problem with Saranziga, but it's not necessarily like coming from the moderator, but it's coming from, okay, what's Saranziga going to say next? But not even necessarily that. I'd say my main problem with him and other trolls similar to him, or not necessarily trolls, just commenters, because he's not really a troll, but, he's someone that has to get the last word in, has to say something about everything, and he has the free time to do it. And because people see that it's already been commented on, they're like, okay, I don't need to offer any new insight to it. It's already been covered. Or if they had something to say that would be contrary, they don't want to get into a long, never-ending argument with someone that just will not let anybody else get the last word. So it becomes kind of frustrating. You kind of tell yourself, well, if there was more conversations going on, then he would disappear and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is that if you're just browsing, you want a comment, you're looking for interesting comments to respond to, and if you see the Emily or Emile, whatever his name is, wall of the text, and then you see Schweinzig commenting left and right on everybody's other post, anything intelligent that's said in the thread, they're commenting on it. It leaves you with like the feeling that maybe I'll not comment because I got I'm either going to run into this. Or yeah. No one's going to want to read my comment, etc.
Yeah, it is frustrating.
There's been trolling efforts I've noticed on the site and stuff like that to try to push them off, and you know, it's done with like the idea that it basically is fruitless. There's really no answer to like you can't scare a person away from posting on a site other than to make them feel unwelcome. Like in very extreme manners, but I've seen persistent trolls at other sites. I've become a persistent troll at different places to basically, it shuts down the site. Like it really does. I went to like an anarcho-capitalist Yahoo group, and I just started just posting every inane thing I could about, at the time, it was like red anarchist stuff, so I was just posting everything about red anarchist comments, you know, here's what Bakunin thinks about this, here's what Emma Goldman thinks about this, over and over every day. And that, since it was slow posting site, the next thing you know, like, they look at the post log for who added the stuff, and it's just walls of me over and over and over. So, yeah, the site died. You know, and I think that's kind of what the problem is also with anarchist news, is something similar to that.
Yeah, no, it's true. And what would you do differently?
I would actually offer another, you see, because I know you have like a planet of sight, like the answer for the anarchist news might almost be to have like a user site that takes like the more better articles and makes it a little more flashier, basically, and then you have comments from users that are registered only, and maybe like have special commenters, like, you know, people that wrote like an article or an essay from a publisher that you're friendly with. That was one of my ideas that I've had before, was to kind of go in that direction, just make the commenting more, not to say elite, but kind of like that. But also for anarchist news itself, how to change, trying to impose more restrictions. There's been nothing but dodging. It goes around any type of moderation that can be offered. So, like, it maybe just try to get groups of people to either post on there and drown it out, or just, I don't know. I think there's really no true answer once you have people that think that they belong there and that's their home, that's what they're going to do every day of their life, and it doesn't matter what anybody says otherwise. So,
well, thank you for this conversation.
All right. Thank you, everyone. You have a good day.
Cool. We'll do.
Weekly Anarchy 101 question and some answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't read, but is certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is, would anarchists prefer either a democratic capitalist government or an authoritarian communist government? I'm very new to anarchism, and I just wanted to know if anarchists would generally prefer a democratic capitalist government, like, say, the US or the UK, or an authoritarian communist government, like, say, the Soviet Union. I was genuinely very curious because much of the writings I've read recently by anarchists, Peter Gelderloos especially, seem to paint anarchism as fundamentally opposed to the concept of authority and very supportive of many democratic principles. Everyone has control in society, not just one person, small group of people, etc. But at the same time, anarchism is also considered far left, like communism, and anarchists seem to agree with communists on many things. So basically, is either communism better than authoritarianism or communism better than capitalism more important for anarchists? Answer number one. As a purely practical matter, there are anarchists who would argue over this question. Some would rather live and fight in the US, others prefer the more socialist option of France, etc. But mostly anarchists reject the practical options and refuse both examples, since we are, after all, by definition, against governments of any kind. Also, I, for one, disagree with the democracy versus authoritarianism and communism versus capitalism continuums. Democracy, certainly as it is in the US, is quite authoritarian, and I am not a communist, so I'm not one of the people who associates communism with good things. Both communism and capitalism are negatives to me, although I am friends with people who disagree with me about communism and not so much with people who disagree with me about capitalism. I think there's more confusion and disagreement about what communism means than there is about what capitalism is. Next answer. As the previous answer alluded, my personal preference is specific to my conditions and are pretty well detailed in my answer to the question that was linked above. I do, however, think that there are ways of exploring what makes them different that can help someone figure out under which systems they might prefer to operate. I think it is important that thinking about living in a democratic versus a totalitarian, which I think might be a more accurate word for what you called authoritarian, I could be wrong, state, is that the tactics and forms of organizing, little o organizing, will vary based on the nature of the regime. The potential repercussions of conflict with the state are often far less severe in a democratic state. I'm presuming some things about the nature of the legal system in said state, than in a totalitarian one. I don't place a value judgment on this, it is an observation. In a democracy, people often get more time using contestation as a sort of play where we can sharpen our skills and experiment over time with different tactics. In a totalitarian regime, it is more likely that groups will organize quietly and under the radar, biding their time until attack is feasible. One of these risks becomes becoming rote ritual, one threatens to possibly never materialize. Neither is better or necessarily preferable, just different. Similarly, a capitalist society provides certain advantages to an anarchist over a communist one, but the converse is also true. As an example, in a communist economy, the grim realities of centrally managed distribution of both production and products lays bare the inefficiencies of state control, while in a capitalist one, people are easily distracted, appeased with new shiny things, or pacified with the perception of being middle class and upwardly mobile. On the other hand, a capitalist economy often creates such stark contrast between the very rich and their access to power versus all the rest of us, while in a communist state, this might be somewhat more obscured, though obviously party officials almost always end up being in an oligarchy. Last answer, I think there are a few semantic discrepancies to clear up that will elucidate on their own what anarchists are generally supportive of. Communism does not equal authoritarian Marxism, Leninism, Marxist-Leninism, etc. It is an economic system where private property is abolished and all commodities and means of production are held in common by the workers who self-manage. Far left does not equal the Soviet Union and similar failures in liberating people from hierarchy. The left is more a broad body of theories which ultimately aim to liberate people from hierarchy and that all failed to do so. There are varying stances on how to do this, with the Marxists traditionally believing that class is the foremost locus of revolutionary activity and anarchists extending the issue to attacking hierarchy as such rather than something like capitalism, which seems to be the most significant reproducer of hierarchy. Democracy does not equal libertarianism. The two are often conflated, and it's a tricky distinction to make, but democracy is more an organizational tool, which has traditionally resulted in the opposite of its intent, the rule of the people. That being said, there are some anarchists, mainly the lefty anarchists who are influenced primarily by classical people like Kropotkin and Bakunin, and the holdover of classical anarchism, Bookchin, who would argue that dialectically we should support the movement from outright fascist brutality to liberal democracy, and the movement from liberal democracy to a nicer kind of capitalism, state capitalism. This, of course, carries with it the presumptions of dialectical progressive thinking, that history will move in the manner we think it will, and that we can gradually, incrementally create the new world in the shell of the old.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel, produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. We thank Aragorn and H.P. Wombat for their help with the topic of the week. contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, t-shirts, and other anarchist material at littleblackcart.com, news and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org.